Emergency Board Education Subcommittee, Thursday, November 15th, 2001, 8:30 a.m., Room H-170.
Committee of the subcommittee until such time as we have one more senator that is here. We need to move several of the agenda items around to accommodate people's time schedules. Item 67, Department of Higher Education, University of Oregon, Autzen Stadium. Mr. Moose, would you come forward, please? And Department of Higher Education, DAS. Mr. McGee. Welcome.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the subcommittee. For the record, my name is Bob Simonton. I am the Director of Capital Construction, Planning and Budgeting for the Oregon University System. And on behalf of the State Board of Higher Education and the University of Oregon, I'm requesting a $9.7 million increase in the expenditure limitation of Article 11F bonds to expand Autzen Stadium at the University of Oregon. An $80 million expenditure limitation was previously approved by the legislature. To provide a brief overview of the project, I'd like to introduce Mr. Bill Moose, Athletic Director of the University of Oregon.
Thank you, and thank you, Chairman Hannon, for accommodating my schedule. I appreciate that. The University of Oregon, as was mentioned, seeks your approval of an Article 11F bond expenditure limitation increase of $9.7 million towards the renovation and expansion of Autzen Stadium. We are very excited to be on the verge of moving forward with the next phase of this important project for the university. The Autzen Stadium expansion project will dramatically improve facilities and stadium infrastructure, add fully accessible seating, and increase seating capacity by 12,100 seats. The original total project was $80 million, and in 2000, the Emergency Board approved $19.7 million in Article 11F bonds towards the project. The project was delayed by 1 year in order to secure additional private funds and to improve the design of the expansion. As a result, the total project will, the cost will increase by $9.7 million to a total of $89.7 million. Funding for this project will come from three sources: private gifts, stadium revenues, and the Article 11F bonds. The project is primarily financed by private gifts. As was stated in our original request, the increased stadium revenue generated by the expansion and enhancements will strengthen the financial stability of the athletic department and provide funds for the operating expenses of the stadium and other athletic department facilities and programs. This will allow us to progress toward our gender equity goals by enhancing women's sports. With the increased revenue funding that currently helps support athletics, will be phased out and is committed to support academic programs. This project enjoys broad-based support from our campus community, alumni, and Duck fans throughout the state. I might add in closing that the direct construction cost for the stadium expansion is estimated at $72 million. Much of this will be paid to in-state firms and much of that for payroll. During the peak period of construction, as many as 600 people will be working on this project. The state should receive income tax revenues generated from this project, and an estimated 48,000 additional people each season will attend Oregon football games, providing a significant boost to the state, the region, and our community's economy. This project is a win for everyone, and we are very appreciative of your consideration of this important and timely request. Thank you again.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of committee members? Mr. Doyle.
Thank you. Mr. Moose, in your testimony, did you state the number of jobs that we'd be looking at with this project?
Yes, I stated around 600 people during the peak of construction.
Okay. And how long do you think that's, I guess, the time frame for that?
The major portion of the construction would begin mid-December, conclude about this time next year.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, Mr. McGee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services. We recommend you approve the request.
Okay, thank you. LFO.
LFO also recommends approval of the request.
Okay. We're lacking one member of the Senate here, but we'll go ahead and accept the motion, and we'll vote on it as soon as we have one more senator here. But Chair would now move that we adopt the LFO recommendation to approve the increase in expenditure limitation. Their discussion. Is there objection? Not. It's been so approved. Representative Doyle, would you like to try this?
I'd be happy to. Sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're going to go back and... We can make it official right now.
This is an expenditure limitation increase for the University of Oregon Broadsea Stadium. We're approving the recommendation. Okay? And there is no further objection. It's been so approved. I want to recognize Representative Doyle and Representative Johnson, who have been appointed to the committee as a makeup. Apparently, you're going to be sharing in the voting. One's going to vote for 6 months, and the other's going to vote for the other 6 months, or whatever is agreed upon by leadership.
That's correct.
And by your presence here, you constitute a quorum, and... if one leaves, then the other can vote for the other, the party member. I guess that's how our rules will reflect this, so that we always have a quorum. My understanding is you want to go testify to another matter.
Correct.
And so anytime you choose to leave to go to that issue, you can, and Representative Johnson will fill in for your vote.
Perfect. Thank
you. We'll go back and... we're trying to move rapidly through the agenda items here this morning. We're on a short time frame, and so I would encourage people that are here for reports to keep your report very simple, quick, to the point, and give us written copies, and we can read it on probably tonight before the full e-board tomorrow, but we're trying to move our agenda item here to accommodate people's times in the building today. Item one, Department of Education. Mr. Fazer, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dave Fazer from Oregon Department of Education. With me is Wayne Neuberger, who is the Director of Assessment at the Oregon Department of Education. We appreciate the continuing support and interest of the legislature and welcome the opportunity to present and discuss with you the status of the Technology Enhanced Student Assessment Project. You have been handed out a copy of the feasibility study that was completed in June 2001. That feasibility study recommended a web-based system to provide student assessment. That system was approved by the 2001 Legislative Assembly and is the system architecture which we'll be reporting status on today. The copy of the report is attached to the letter that was submitted to your committee, and so we can make our comments brief.
Okay, thank you. Wayne?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Wayne Neuberger, the Associate Superintendent for Assessment with the Oregon Department of Education. Let me just briefly describe the problem we're trying to solve here with this system. First of all, there are with a more traditional assessment program, there are sort of three things that tend to be at issue. The first one has to do with the sort of the burdensomeness of dealing with basically paper and pencil tests. As an illustration, what I have before you in the stack of papers here is the amount of material it would take to test the 100 legislators who are currently part of the Oregon legislative system. If with the TESA system, what we can do is test the same number of people with this amount of material. Basically, it's a card that has on it an ID number that a student uses to log into the system and use the system. So it takes us about 3 months to go through a process of working with the paper to get back results to students. It is literally a matter of seconds that we can do it with the other system. So that's the first sort of objective, is to reduce the burdensomeness of the system. The second one is to provide more flexibility in the schedule of the testing. With this system, typically the testing occurs over a 2-week period that's sort of fixed during the year. With computerized testing, we began testing in October 18th, and we will be testing through the end of almost the end of the school year. So the flexibility within schools to when they can test kids has been expanded considerably. The third part deals with the information that's available. It takes about a month and a half for students to get their information back from taking this kind of test. As I indicated before, it's literally seconds after the student takes the test that they get the information back, and it's accessible by the student's teacher. So there's better information, more timely information that's available. As the report indicates, we completed stage one of this project last spring and did an evaluation of that. The information is in here. Basically, what we found was that the students love this system. They enjoy taking the test on the computer much more than they do taking the paper and pencil test. And the staff in the schools also see the benefit that we've identified for this system. The other thing is, in the feasibility study that you've received, the contractor who put together our initial feasibility study went back and took a look at the objectives and the features of the system that we try to identify for this program, and did an analysis to see whether or not the system that we used in last spring will, in fact, satisfy those objectives. And basically, their conclusion is that we are on track with that, that all of them are there. The other thing I want to point out, I suppose, is that the reason we're able to do this in the first place is the result of legislative action, Senate Bill 622 in the 99 session that allocated funds to provide the connectivity to all of the schools in the state. So even the most remote schools in the state have the access to the internet that will allow us to do this. But I also want to point out that basically we take it to the school, and a big part of this project is working with the schools and the districts in making sure that the system within the schools can handle this. And that is where a lot of our work is going on right now, is to make for sure as we go from school to school. We've gone from 28 schools in the spring to 109 schools. This fall, we'll add another 100 schools in January and another 100 schools in March. And in each case, what we have to do is do we'll work up with each of those districts to make for sure that the equipment works fine, that the systems inside those schools are working fine, and that basically the system will work. So the ramping up of it is a little more complex than if every school in the state had exactly the same system. They don't. I mean, it's very different inside schools. So right now, that's the biggest job that we have to do.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Not Das?
Mr. Chair, I'm Linda Ames with the Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend that you acknowledge receipt of the report.
Okay, thank you. LFO?
LFO recommends that you acknowledge receipt of the report.
Okay, the Chair would now move that we acknowledge receipt of the report. And is there further discussion? The only concern is, Mr. Neuberger, I hope the legislators don't have to take that test.
Well, if we had more time, we would have done
that. I don't think we have too good a showing.
Mr. Chair, would you like a demo in the future?
No. All right, is there any discussion? Is there objection? Not, it's been so approved.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 62, Department of Revenue, Ms. Harshenko. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Good Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Elizabeth Harshenko, Director of your Department of Revenue. I'm here today asking for an increase in our other funds expenditure limitation of $926,902 to cover the administrative costs associated with issuing the kicker checks this fall.
Okay, and this is statutorily set that it is money that is deducted from the kicker amount to pay for the administrative costs.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Das?
Mr. Chair, Linda Ames with Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend approval of the request.
Okay. LFO?
LFO recommends approval of the request.
Is there further questions by committee members? Representative Hill?
Thanks. Is there any way that you can retain information since some, are you doing electronic funds transfer to some taxpayers from the last? Things. In other words, would that, could you retain that information, and or is it not possible to sort of reduce this cost in the future by retaining where you send the money electronically?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hill, we're not doing electronic deposit of these checks. We're working on direct deposit for refunds for this upcoming processing season.
In the future, if there's another kicker.
If we have other checks to send out, if the taxpayer indicates that they've got the same bank account, then we would retain the information in our in our database.
Thank
you. Is there further questions? Chair would now move that we approve the request of item 62, creating the expenditure limitation of other funds of $926,902 to pay for the cost of processing and issuing personal income tax refund checks. Is there discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hill, would you like to share that? All right, item 20, State Police. They're not here, so we'll move over that.
All right.
Item 21, Department of Public Safety and Standards and Training.
Sending folks to get our budget analyst.
Okay.
And I believe Dave White is here as well.
Go ahead and start, Diane.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Diane Middle, Director of Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, and we are here today as a follow-up to prior contacts with this committee in Ways and Means to advise you that we have selected a state-owned piece of property in Salem as the preferred location, and also to request the next incremental increase in the other funds capital construction expenditure limitation. I would like to take a moment to kind of walk people back through this process that we have been through thus far and indicate that this began basically back in 1997 when the legislature requested that we look at taking law enforcement training in particular from the 8 weeks that we were presently at that point to 16 weeks, which at that time was the national average. During that time, the national average has gone to 22 weeks. We are at 10 weeks at this point, and that's brought about by the fact that our facilities will not allow the growth. As you may know, we have leased and borrowed property all over the area to try to accomplish that, but have been unsuccessful getting up to the 16 weeks. When we were asked by the legislature to begin this process, we were directed to first conduct a facilities plan and a strategic business plan, which we accomplished. That went through a process, was accepted by our constituents, by our board, and then was presented to a prior legislative session. We were instructed to follow that strategic business plan in order to implement a training academy that would accommodate all of our disciplines and also get us to the 16 weeks of law enforcement training. We were also directed to conduct an extensive review of state-owned property as well as privately owned property and to see what would be the efficiencies of remaining at Western Oregon University. We accomplished that by implementing a number of advisory committees, one of which was a core facilities group, which was individuals representing each of our disciplines, police, corrections, firefighters, parole and probation, telecommunicators, and they agreed to work with us basically on a weekly basis to do the nuts and bolts of what was needed and what needs assessment needed to occur. We also had a facilities steering committee made up of approximately 20 individuals that were executives selected by the associations representing those disciplines. So in other words, the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police, the Sheriff's Association, the fire chiefs, the fire district directors, all of those folks sent representatives, and they were selected to represent not only their entities, but to give us a geographic representation so that we were dealing with issues all across the state and also being sensitive to issues of small and large departments and, in the case of fire, the volunteers. That group met on a monthly basis, and they oversaw the work that was done by the core group, by our staff, and then by the consultants that we brought on. They have worked continuously with us and will continue throughout this project.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hill.
How much did we spend on consultants?
I don't have that exact figure at the moment, but you might have it. At this point in time, we've had a couple expenditure limitations that provided for that. The first one was $250,000, but some of that went to a project manager that DAS allowed us to place on staff to help with this process. Let's say originally was a transfer from DAS to Department of Public Safety Standards and Training and is now a limited duration position. We came back and got $400,000 to help with site selection and review. And our last request was for, if I'm getting this right, $870,000, of which we have not expended $550,000 of that. I see Larry nodding, so my numbers must be fairly close to right off the top of my head.
That's correct. Chair Hill and Chair Hand and Representative Hill, they have spent less than $1 million total so far in all the work that's been done. I don't have an actual breakdown of the consultants, but it would be probably somewhere between half to two-thirds of that.
Okay.
Senator Carter.
I received a letter from Senator Yee. She alleges that you did not do appropriate or proper or broad-based communication to other communities who might have been interested in the moving of this department to other parts of the state. And in her request, she's asking that this is being delayed, that this be delayed. But my question is, with a project manager on board, with a site selection group, tell me why places like Sweet Home and other places feel left out of this, with you having to spend the kind of dollars that you did and having a project manager and a site selection group together.
Senator Carter, it's a little bit difficult for me to understand that. From the beginning of the process, we met with the communities, we explained what we were doing. A number of times they were invited to the steering committee and to the core work groups to make presentations to verify that we had accurate information. I think in retrospect, especially as it related to Sweet Home, in the final analysis and when we were in this since May, when we were asked to delay the project and give more consideration to Sweet Home and Scappoose, we focused with the assistance of our consultants on the high-risk areas. As we did that, especially as it related to the Sweet Home property, we spent most of our time, as did the project manager, working with the property owner directly. The issue in Sweet Home is the extent of the environmental cleanup on this old industrial site. The property owners had contracted with Kennedy Jenks to review a portion of the site. They did not review the entire site, but we waited basically until October 3rd. We were told, I think it was July, that we would have those final reports. It was not until October 3rd, and we were in constant communication with them to get those reports. In retrospect, perhaps what we should have done is had more contact with the community, letting them know that we were working with the property owner as we were going through this. But there was certainly a lot of contact, and they actually, from that community, they did have representatives on the steering committee. So not the community, but they had their sheriff sat on the committee as well.
So did you consider this a public process in that sense, that you spoke with some of the people?
When we first, Senator Hand and Senator Carter, when we first began this process, one of the things that we were concerned about, having watched as Department of Corrections went through the siting of prisons, we wanted to know early on that we would be accepted in the community. And so we did go out and actually make contact with the community. We did not have big community meetings after that point because it was clear this was not going to be like prison siting, that in fact people were that thought we would be a good neighbor and a good state agency to have there. So really what we focused on from that point is the things that were crucial to us was that we needed to have adequate space. That was essential. The other thing that was essential is that we did not delay the process any longer. Some of you may recall that the chiefs and sheriffs made a concession this past legislative session. As desperately as they wanted to get to 16 weeks, they felt if we could stay on track and get this facility up and running by 2004, that they would be willing to forego what we would have to expend in extra instructors and finding and leasing spaces and all the travel costs associated with that to get to 16 weeks. They would forego that if they were sure that that budget money could be used in this process to move us forward and expedite us. And that's exactly what we did. So it has been critical to us to move this project in a timely way. So when we started focusing on the high-risk issues, we focused on the consultants from those areas and our consultants to go out and get that information and bring it back. And it
so
really
you had consultants from Sweet Home engaged in this process?
They had been. Our consultants and the engineer from West Tech Engineering, who's here today, met with their city planners and their city engineers to have discussions and met with Willamette folks to understand what the issues were as to each site, in particular the Sweet Home site.
One of the greatest rubs I've ever experienced since being in the legislature from 1984 was that departments sometimes don't do a good job of notifying legislators that you're looking in their communities. Let me encourage that. So that when people like me who have a member who has some concerns about this kind of action, it appears from your conversation that you've done that, but sometimes just a courtesy letter to the legislature, the legislator in that particular community would, I think, would go a long way.
Senator Hanner, Senator Carter, I can't agree with you more, and you know I accept responsibility for not doing that. I think sometimes we just get so busy and focused mm-hmm. on what we're doing, we forget, and we should not forget. We owe right. that to each of you to do that.
And I hate to use the P word on record, but I get really upset when people are coming into my district, departments are coming into my district, and they don't even give a courtesy call that you're there and that you're doing things, because it makes you look stupid when your people talk to you about things and then you don't know anything about it. So let me encourage that for the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In response, Senator Carter, to your concern, I represent one of those communities. And I don't share the same opinion of public involvement that Director Middle does. I have my city manager from Scappoose here, who I'm sure would be happy to discuss with the committee where he asked our community's response to this process. I think there are two problems here, and I want to try to address them in the questions that I ask the director and the comments I share with the committee. To address it from a legislative perspective, because it's my observation, we have a very flawed process here that has, in effect, asked three little communities that are desperate for jobs to plead for jobs for a decision that was already made a long time ago. And it has put three little communities through, I think, a cynical and cruel process. It has asked them to use a political collateral. It has asked them to use staff time and real money for engineers for a decision that was made a long time ago. And so I know from attending the public meeting in Scappoose where 150 people showed up that to the degree there was public input saying, yes, we'd like to be considered, the department got that. But as far as participation with the cities at a lower level of detail, I can't subscribe to Director Middle's characterization